It is Tuesday. I'm Mark Bayshore. At the top of our program, members of Congress are back in their home districts for the holiday break. Just before they adjourned, lawmakers passed and President Obama signed a $1.1 trillion federal budget. The massive omnibus spending bill averts a feared government shutdown, and it provides funding for several key priorities here in Michigan. Among other things, the package includes $100 million for the facility for rare isotope beams under construction here at Michigan State and $1 billion for Great Lakes projects. Joining me to talk about the newly signed federal budget, Michigan U.S. Senator Gary Peters. Senator Peters, welcome back.
Well, it's good to be with you, Mark. How are you doing today?
We're doing just fine here on the glide path to Christmas, as it were.
Wonderful. Well, wonderful. Well, Merry Christmas to you and happy holidays to your family.
Thank you, and back at you. Before we get into the new budget and what's in it, talk to us about what you're doing in Flint today. I know Senator Stabenow and Congressman Kildee are along with you there.
Well, we are. We're talking about a provision that was put into this omnibus, which you opened up this segment with, which deals with blight removal, part of the hardest hit funds that were still available as a result of what had happened after the Great Recession. And we were able to get funding for blight removal programs across the state. That has happened in the past. They've been extremely successful everywhere. We focused in our talk in Washington, particularly on some of the successes in Detroit, where there has been massive blight removal. And as a result of that blight removal in neighborhoods, it's stabilized neighborhoods. You've also seen property values come back up, which is important to bring residents back into our central cities. But these funds are available all across the state, including in Flint and Saginaw and in Lansing, the west side of the state, up in the UP. This is very important funding to give communities a tool to deal, particularly in their neighborhoods. And as you know, as important as a downtown district is or a central business district is to a city is not strong unless the neighborhoods are strong as well. And with large amounts of blight in our older areas we need to deal with, that we will be able to provide critical funding for these local programs. And that's what we'll be talking about in Flint later this morning. But this is a program really for the entire state of Michigan.
The EFRIB project, the funding, the $100 million for the EFRIB project here, was of particular interest for people in the Lansing area. Was that ever in jeopardy, or were you confident that that would clear the Congress and be signed?
Well, we have to fight for it every appropriation cycle. So I wouldn't say it's in jeopardy, but it just doesn't happen. You also have to really get out there and work for it. This is a continuing payment on a project that's already well underway, as folks in Lansing know. In fact, the EFRIB is ahead of schedule, which is always great to see a project, particularly of the magnitude of this and the complexity of it. It is actually ahead of schedule. But this is an incredible investment for the Lansing area, but also for the state of Michigan. This $100 million continues to put us on the path to fully fund that project, which will mean hundreds of jobs in the area. But more importantly, it really puts Michigan and the greater Lansing area on the map nationally and internationally as a center for nuclear physics, just cutting-edge research that's going to bring in thousands of leading researchers from around the world that will come to Michigan State University campus to work on this or work with the EFRIB. So this is an incredible project for us in Michigan. And already Michigan State University has one of the leading nuclear physics programs in the country. I think they have more percentage-wise, more PhDs than any other university in the country. It's really quite a wonderful thing we have here in our state. And now with the EFRIB, that program gets even stronger and will become one that has even a stronger international reputation.
I know the new budget includes $300 million in funding for the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, which is all about, well, combating invasive species and a really a variety of measures promoting the general health of the Great Lakes. Was it hard coming up with that money, or do you detect notable reluctance from some in the Congress to fund this?
Well, it's difficult to get funding for anything now. You have to fight very aggressively to make that happen. I was encouraged, though, when it comes to Great Lakes funding. This is a big deal, this restoration, to make sure the Great Lakes continue to stay clean, and we try to make them even cleaner by dealing with some of the legacy pollution sites that we have around the lakes. But I was encouraged in that I'm finding with my colleagues in the Senate. In fact, I've been working on a pipeline safety bill, for example, to keep the Great Lakes clean from an oil spill. But what often and I want to say that because it's important, because I think it tells us a little bit about where members of Congress are now. In fact, that legislation that I worked on got unanimous support in committee. And when you are dealing with issues related to something like the Great Lakes, for example, oftentimes it's not a Democratic or Republican issue. It tends to be more of a regional issue.
Uh-huh.
And if you're on the west side of the country, that's different than if you're on the east side of the country or in the south, and everybody has their regional issues. But people really have been coming together and understanding that the Great Lakes is not a resource just for the Midwest and for Michigan and Wisconsin and other states. But the Great Lakes is really a resource for the whole country. And as the country and the world gets thirstier, people realize that having a body of fresh water as large as the Great Lakes is an incredible national asset that we have to do everything we can to protect. And so I'm starting to see some signs that we're transcending some of the regionalism that's associated with the Great Lakes, and really now getting an appreciation from my colleagues around the country that this is a national asset that has to be protected and preserved.
We're talking about parts of the new $1 trillion plus federal budget Congress just passed last Friday, and President Obama quickly signed into law. Our guest is Michigan Senator Democrat Gary Peters. You alluded to the pipeline safety measure. Let's talk a little bit more about that. I mean, you're involved in that, which is obviously of concern in Michigan. A lot of people are aware of Enbridge's Line 5 running beneath the Straits of Mackinac. Talk about that measure and where we're at.
Well, I introduced a bill with Senator Stabenow. Together, we introduced a bill for pipeline safety to toughen the rules for oil pipelines around the country, but we focus primarily on the Great Lakes. And I was able to get a number of the key provisions in that legislation. I was able to get that inserted into the PHMSA reauthorization. PHMSA is the federal agency that oversees pipeline safety. As we were reauthorizing it through the Commerce Committee, many of the key provisions related to protecting the Great Lakes is inserted in that legislation. First and foremost, it will now designate all pipelines throughout the Great Lakes Basin as pipelines in high-consequence areas. And what that means is if you're in a high-consequence area, those pipelines are subjected to the strictest, most robust federal oversight when it comes to pipeline safety. We did not have that, for example, with the Kalamazoo pipeline. That, unfortunately, we had the big spill a few years ago that's already cost us over $1 billion in cleanup. Now that pipeline would be considered a high-consequence area, as all other pipelines throughout the Great Lakes. Line 5 you mentioned up in Mackinac, which is of particular concern to me, and as well as others throughout the state. But in addition to the Line 5 across the Straits of Mackinac, there's also a great concern about the pipeline as it goes across the entire Upper Peninsula, across to the Straits of Mackinac. And if you had a pipeline there and all of the feeders into Lake Michigan, for example, would be potentially catastrophic. That pipeline will now all be under these strict guidelines. The other aspect of the bill is that deals with ice cover, that we now have to look at ice cover, which surprisingly wasn't considered in the past. And if you're thinking of Line 5 in the Straits of Mackinac, during the winter, that tends to be covered by thick, thick ice. And as difficult as it would to clean up a spill at any time of the year during thick ice cover makes it nearly impossible. We need to recognize that and take action accordingly.
The budget measure also lifts the oil export ban. I know many environmentalists, as I understand it, favored retaining that ban. How do you feel about that?
Well, I was very disappointed about that provision. I think it makes no sense to do that. This is we still import millions of barrels of oil every year into the United States. But the oil industry wanted to be able to export it and sell that American oil to China and other places, which doesn't make sense to me.
It's an economic stimulus, isn't it?
Well, you're still selling the oil to Americans. Americans are buying that oil. Before we import millions of barrels. Now we're going to probably import even more oil because some of our American oil may be going overseas. And that could also increase the price because you've got now more markets for it to sell outside of the United States. So I think that's very troubling. And one aspect that's particularly troubling to me, we give very large tax breaks under the tax code to oil that's produced in the United States. And now those tax breaks continue, even though that oil may be shipped to China. We now have a situation where American taxpayers are going to be subsidizing oil being sent to China.
The budget bill tightens the visa waiver program. There will be a higher level of scrutiny imposed on anyone who has traveled to Iran, Iraq, Sudan, and Syria in the past 5 years if they want to enter the United States. There seems to be a consensus this was a good and necessary move, was it?
Well, there's no question that the visa waiver program was one that needed to be tightened. That's where most folks come in with limited screening as a result of that visa waiver. With those countries, we needed to tighten up that program. I think we'd have to continue to tighten that program. This is an important step, but we still have to move further. And one of the issues, and I serve on the Homeland Security Committee in the Senate, and one of the issues still is making sure that those countries who are visa waiver countries even have that data about where folks have traveled who are in their country and whether or not that data is in a database that's easily accessible by our immigration officials as well. So this is a step. It's important. We have to continue to focus on it, but we're not done. We still have a lot more work to do.
Describe the tenor of this debate over whether to pause Syrian refugee resettlement. What was the tenor of that debate?
Well, I think it was off base. You know, I strongly support the refugee program, and when you look at trying to deal with a threat that may be coming from abroad, there was a focus on the refugee program, which is actually probably it is the most difficult way to come into the United States. It is one in which requires extensive background checks by the Department of Homeland Security, by the FBI, by the Department of State. The United Nations is involved. It's a process that takes 18 to 24 months for someone to come through and to be screened. That was now where our focus should be. Also, not to mention the fact that I believe that as a country and our values, we have borders that are open to those who face persecution and violence and are looking for a refuge. That's who we are as Americans. We have to have a robust screening process, but that already exists within the refugee program. Where we needed to be looking at tightening the process was in the visa waiver program. That's where the focus needs to be. That's what's happened in the omnibus. You don't see changes in the refugee program. Instead, you see focus on the waiver program, which is where it should be. And as I mentioned earlier, we still have some work to do in that area. But we need to focus on where the potential risks are and not politicize something that is not a risk. And in my mind also, not only was it politicizing something that wasn't a risk, it was politicizing something that goes to the very core of who we are as Americans and our values.
Let me ask you a broader question, a broader political question that relates to the budget. Gregory Corte in USA Today wrote that the spending bill represents a ceasefire, he called it, quote, a ceasefire in the battle over executive power. And he cites a series of compromises that the budget contained. For example, Congress allowed the president's clemency initiative to continue, but it didn't give him all of the funding that he wanted to run it. You know, an earlier version of the bill would have killed the initiative altogether. Do you agree with this interpretation of the spending bill as a ceasefire in the battle over executive power?
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot in the omnibus bill, and I think that the way to characterize it is that there was actually an encouraging aspect of it, is that it found some middle ground, that you saw Democrats, Republicans come together, it's including the administration. This was really a negotiation with the Congress and with the administration in a bipartisan way, with an awful lot of give and take. So the executive was able to make sure they could retain some of their powers. Congress wanted to retain some of their appropriation powers, which are the key to congressional powers, the ability to spend money. It's the power of the purse. So that is been retained, but it was really finding some of that middle ground.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you've got Republicans controlling both houses of the Congress, but you had to come up with a bill that the president would sign. So it kind of represents that degree of compromise. Let's talk politics for just one quick minute. A longtime Michigan Democratic insider, ardent Democrat, told me late last week that he is expecting some number of Democrats to cross over in Michigan's primary come March and vote for Donald Trump because they feel a Trump nomination would all but guarantee the general election to Hillary Clinton. How do you feel about that?
Well, my view, I'm a Democrat. I think Democrats, if they are Democrats, should stick to the voting on the Democratic side and not get involved in Republican politics. Right now, Donald Trump is doing very well. He seems to speak for a large segment of the Republican Party, and I think it's up to the Republicans to determine who their nominee is. I believe I support Hillary Clinton. I believe she's going to run a strong race, will be our next president. As far as I'm concerned, it probably won't matter who the Republicans pick. Hillary Clinton will be our next president.
You really don't think it'll make any difference if Donald Trump or Marco Rubio, for example, were to be the Republican nominee in terms of the general election?
No, well, I always focus on a general election. It's what I've done myself, and I believe that the politics of the Republican Party right now, which is very far to the right, very much out of step with where most folks are in this country and what you're seeing in the primary. No matter who the candidate is, they're certainly appealing to the far right. There are some more so than others, but I do believe that the party in general is out of step with where the country is, and it's going to be difficult, no matter who the nominee is, to try to come back to the middle after they've spent the last couple of years really moving more and more to the right.
Democrat Gary Peters is Michigan's junior U.S. senator. We've been talking about some of the provisions included in the new $1.1 trillion federal budget that Congress just passed late last week and that President Obama signed just before adjourning for the holidays. Senator Peters, Merry Christmas. Thank you for your time.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you, and all the best to you and your family and all of your listeners. Hope everybody has a wonderful holiday season and all the best in the new year.
Thank you.